This is Blue July, and you're listening to the Be Someone podcast. Lights looking bright, the H got the vibe. She's my name on the signs, it's my time to shine. When I was cruising 45 and it crossed my mind that I shine like the sun and that I'll be someone.
Lights, camera, session, use the flow molasses. Blue July, my fashion, future bright and glasses. Applause from the masses.
This is the Be Someone podcast.
Hi guys, I need you to do me a favor. When you catch a free second, please go to my website, coachortiz.com, and on my website you'll be able to locate all my podcasts, past and present, and then you'll also be able to see my line of children's books that I've been recently releasing. You know, so do me a favor, go to coachortiz.com and check them out. You take care, have a blessed day, and be that someone. Hey everybody, this is the coach Chris Ortiz at the Be Someone podcast, and today we're just going to have a little bit of fun, man. There's all kinds of serious stuff going on in the world, and sometimes we got to take a step back and just relax and have a little fun, man. So we're going to do a little wrestling roundtable. I'm going to let my guests introduce themselves.
My name's Eric, Chris's cousin, and lifelong wrestling fan. That's about it.
Same thing, my name is Tony. Lifelong wrestling fan for gosh, I don't know how long, too long these days. Also fellow jiu-jitsu practitioner and other sorts of hot mess. Probably seen his book, his Dear Mama. That's it's a little project I helped put together with him. Yeah, Chris, what do you got for today?
Hey man, what we're gonna do today is that we're gonna do a little wrestling roundtable, and we're just gonna have a little fun. We're going to cat around. I'm in here with two wrestling encyclopedias, you know, so we're about to open up this encyclopedia and have us a good time, man. I'm going to start with this, man. Hey, what's your earliest memory of wrestling, Eric?
Man, it's probably those two videos that I was telling you about, Hulkamania 6 and SummerSlam 88. I have no idea how they ended up in my house or how they got to them. Apparently, they belong to you, but they were, as far as I'm concerned, they were mine. And I remember watching those like when I was like maybe 3. So, I mean, that's 91. It's a long time ago. But, dude, Hulkamania was everything to me.
What was one of the matches on that Hulkamania DVD? It wasn't even a DVD. It was a tape.
It was a tape. But you know what? They had some... I remember he fought Stan Hansen in Japan. And they were throwing chairs and they were in the crowd. I'd never seen anything like that. And then Hulk Hogan just started putting work on Stan Hansen, and he stepped back, but it was cool. That was something that you don't get to see or you don't get to hear. I mean, people probably don't even know Stan Hansen.
The cowboy
with the lariat.
Yeah. That's a great move. What about you, Tony? What's your earliest recollection of wrestling?
God, I want to say it was maybe 93, 94. You got to understand one thing. I was born and raised in Conroe, Texas. I still live here. I'll probably end up dying here. Even if I joined the Marine Corps, I still somehow came back and haven't left. So it's kind of depressing in a way. But my wrestling came through my mom. My mom was a lifelong Lucha Libre fan.
Damn, AAA. Yes. A hell of a mom.
Yeah.
Good job, mom.
Nice. Yeah, right? So she was born in... She was born, like, dirt poor. And... In Mexico at that time, there was only two things that would come into town: the circus and Lucha Libre. So her fascination with it traveled all the way here to the United States. And I would remember Saturdays and Sundays on cable TV. And if you remember the old cable boxes with the buttons up front, she would always put it on there and I'd watch. It was just Lucha Libre. And you had everybody you could name off. You had Eddie, you had Art Barr, you had Conan, Perro Aguayo, Blue Panther, Blue Demon, so many to name from Dr. Wagner, so many that I still, Dr. even, cool. Yeah, even now, like, at 33, every Saturdays, like, on Twitch, you'll catch them, and it's just, like, amazing. It just blows my mind that they're still wrestling, and they're, like, dropping pints of blood like nobody's business. Like nowadays,
sangre.
I know, right? It's like real blood nowadays. It's like somebody gets cut and the match has to stop and you got to patch them up. Oh, but they're still bleeding like nobody's business. They have no security. There's like no guardrails, so they're falling into people. They're getting mad. They're probably fighting with the crowd. It's crazy. But that's the earliest I can think of. And from there, it just evolved. And the funny thing, like I said, I was born and raised here. I've not once ever heard of WWF, the AWA, or WCW.
Paul Bosch.
None of that. I didn't even know wrestling was a thing here in the States. It was when one time with one of my friends, we were playing on his PlayStation, he popped in WCW Nitro. And my first thing was like, why is Eddie and Rey Mysterio on that game? Like, the whole concept of contracts and working and all, I didn't know. I thought they were just Mexican luchadors, but no, they were already in the States doing their stuff. So that's how the ball started, got rolling. And then from the following day, we played WWF Warzone.
Damn.
And yes. Yeah, and that's how I got introduced to everybody. And I started, and they tell me, oh yeah, it's on a Mondays, and my dad knew it was on a Mondays. I'm like, how come you ain't telling me this? So
going to the circus.
Yeah. Right. And so from there, it was just every week was just Monday Night Raw, Monday Night Raw. Even through the Monday Night Wars, it was always Raw. Forget WCW. The good thing about WCW is they had that extra hour before Raw.
Yeah.
So I would watch all the cruiserweights because I grew up watching them. And then I go to Raw and finish the actual stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's how...
Get a little Billy Kidman in
there. Yeah. Yeah. You had everybody there. And it was just like, great. I'm like, great. I grew up watching these guys. Now I'm watching them on my TV. And now I get to go to Raw, which is even better.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Is there a chance your mom's going to walk in the house with the luchador mask?
Yes. No.
No.
God. No. Those Damn days it. Are long behind her. Every now and then she'll ask me, like, hey, what's so-and-so doing? And I'll either they're retired, they're dead, or they're doing something else. So she'll ask me, like, hey, are they still? No. But that's about it. Her fandom's, like, long gone.
Man, my first experience, the one that I remember, you know, from the beginning was going to Grandpa Jesse's house. Mm-hmm. And I think it was your dad and Uncle Jesse had ordered WrestleMania 3. Mm-hmm. You know, the Pontiac Silverdome. And what was it, like 90,000 or 75? It was huge. It was
we'll
the
go
biggest,
90.
I'm going to go 90. It was the biggest event of its time, though. And, you know, you had the classic David versus Goliath, you know, Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant, you know, as the main event. And it really wasn't even a good match, you know, if we're being honest. You know, it was kind of stiff. But I wouldn't even say stiff. Both the gentlemen, they were just slow. Andre was a little bit older. You know, and Hogan, I don't ever think Hogan was all that great, personally. But you also had the classic match. You had Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Macho Man Randy Savage, which was probably, in my opinion, the greatest match in wrestling history. You know, so that was my earliest experience with it. Let's move on to this, man. Let's say that there is a wrestling Mount Rushmore. You get four names to put on there. Eric, who you got on there, man?
Oh, man. Spot, I would say I'm going Ric Flair. You know, you really can't deny that's worldwide. Hulk Hogan, I think you got to go Stone Cold as well.
Dang.
And then number four, that's tough. Then you got to go Shawn Michaels. He's done it like Vince Carter in like what? How many decades, man?
Yeah,
that's 80s, 90s, 10s, early 2000s, and. Didn't he wrestle earlier this year?
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
really? He got in the ring? Yeah. Oh, he was bald.
Yeah, he was bald.
I mean, that's
not much on Shawn Michaels.
It was. He looked rusty, but you can tell, damn, he still got it.
The bottom line is he's still able to go out there and do it.
No, yeah, because you look at the match, he's like, oh, he's a little slow, but he still got it. Like, if he took enough time to get back into shape, he would go. He could still go.
Well, that's a pretty damn good list, man, because, you know, you got Ric Flair carrying, you know, the NWA, WCW, whatnot. You got Hogan, who ran the show in the 80s and the 90s, and shoot, even early 2000s. You got Shawn Michaels, man. It's like pound for pound, one of the darn best, man. And who else? Oh, Stone Cold, man. Yeah, Attitude Era, man.
Well, because, I mean, think about it like this. When you mention wrestling to anybody, they're going to say, they more than likely won't say Ric Flair. They're going to say, that's the thing that Hulk Hogan does. Or people who are like our age, they know Stone Cold. Mm-hmm. I mean, that people are getting in trouble saying hell yeah and all that in school when we were in kids. So
crotch
shots. I mean, you can't go wrong with those two. They were worldwide icons. So yeah, they have to be on there.
Yeah. Hey, well, in Coach Ortiz's class, if you give me a hell yeah, you're gonna get a high five. The kid's gonna get an A in my class. What about you, Tony? We're going.
Man, same thing. You're putting me on the spot because I don't even have time to think about it. There's so many criteria I look at. I don't just put guys on there for the sake of putting guys on there, with the exception of Ric Flair. Obviously, you start out with him just because he was what an actual world traveling champion was. Going around the world, putting your name out there, working with the crowd, working with the guys, being that what a business model is. Nowadays, when you look at how the business model of a wrestling company is, it's like a hot potato. Let me get my turn with the title. You get your turn with the title. And then, okay, let's give this guy. And he's this guy. Not this guy. Not Corbin. No. So it kind of gets watered down over the times. Let's say Ric Flair. Obviously, Stone Cold, just because of the amount of money he drew in the Attitude Era.
And short amount of time, dude.
And I was right there with him. I was buying the t-shirts, flipping people off. Hell yeah. Cold beers. All the stuff in there. You know, I would never shave my hair bald, but...
You're close, man.
I got the high military stuff, but then when I was in boot camp, my head was bald, so I was like, okay, that came. But if I was balding, I probably would go bald. And then my last two are so tricky, man. Because, see, the same thing, like, he mentioned Shawn Michaels, but I didn't see Michaels wrestle till, like, he came back in 2002.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. I when I started watching, he was a commissioner. He came in as commissioner. You know, half peeled up and everything. You could tell he was, like, off his rocker. But I would say The Undertaker, just because of what a character and how to protect it is supposed to be driven by, right? If you watch, like, this past, like, everybody had their last dance with Michael Jordan, I had the last ride with The Undertaker. So the documentary was, like, the perfect example of why he did certain things and why he still does certain things to this day. And then last but not least, not to keep it here so much in, like, statewide, but Hiroshi Tanahashi will be my last of, like, this current generation.
Yeah. Tanahashi's from Texas?
No.
No, you mean like
Tanahashi. Generation.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
like this, like if we're talking like
Japan, Texas.
I know, right? Like if we're talking about like the last 20 years of wrestling, it would be Tanahashi simply because what John Cena was to WWE, he was the same thing with New Japan, and he could tell a story. And even nowadays, he's no longer considered the ace. He's the guy that you look back to. And if you look at his career, and I always tell people, go to YouTube, Google Tanahashi, and Google Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson, U30 championship match, exhibition. And it's two of them, and it's just like they're going for 30 minutes straight. Just boom, going nonstop. And it's an actual, very technical match. And I'm like, okay, this guy's something. So when I watched Wrestle Kingdom 1, I was like, okay. When he went against Tao Kei, I'm like, all right, this guy is it. This dude's all business, and he can go. And as you watch him evolve and grow, and going with Shinsuke Nakamura, going with Keiji Muto, Minoru Suzuki, you realize this guy has it all. Like, a better career couldn't be more written than what he's done in New Japan.
Good Lord, man. When I told you this guy was an encyclopedia, you wasn't lying, man. I'm going to change it up a little bit because we can't be saying the same darn thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to start off with Bret the Hitman Hart. The excellence of execution. Good God, that guy can sell. That guy, when he's in the ring, it looks like, you know, like it's a real fight. You know, dude's stomping his foot on the ground and hitting you at the same time. Mm-hmm. Throw him into the turnbuckle, man, and he hits it with his chest, falls back. Like, I really felt like he puts on a really good performance. I was always impressed by, you know, the way he conducted himself in the ring. You know, I think the excellence of execution is a perfect way to sum it all up. You know, second, let's see who we got. I'm going to go with The Rock. You know, how do you not go with someone that's making the most money in Hollywood right now?
Hollywood.
Well, he's born into it.
Man, but it came over. Like, how many WrestleManias did he main event? You know, he's got a handful of WrestleManias that he main event.
He could still.
He could come and main event, you know, WrestleMania this next year. Yeah. You know, just call someone out. But, you know, like, he's taken, you know, $7 and sleeping on a mattress, and then has, you know, flipped it to playing at the University of Miami, failing, or I don't even want to say failing, not making it, you know, in the NFL, playing a little bit in the CFL, got into the family business, you know, initially wasn't received very well, this whole Rocky Maivia thing, didn't hit too hard, you know. But as soon as they put them in the Nation, you know, that's where you got to start to see like the real rock, man, and you know, turned it into a bunch of, you know, WrestleMania main events. Him and Hogan. Yeah. Him and Hogan was, to me, that was like the most hyped up WrestleMania main event, man. And to watch that match and to watch the crowd play into that, like, that was magical. Yeah. I was an adult at the time, but it took me back to being a kid.
Yeah.
Fun fact about that match.
Uh-oh, tell me.
Rock was supposed to be the good guy and Hogan was supposed to be the bad guy. But when they realized that they were cheering for Hogan, on the spot, they switched the whole match. So throughout the whole match, like everything they had planned, they threw it out the window and said, let's just call it in the ring.
That's two legends right there. That's how they knew it.
Nobody wanted to boo Hulk Hogan. I know when we seen him come back, going, oh my God, that's Hulk Hogan.
He's hulking up, man. He's going to pull it off.
Well, when they came back as NWO, like I remember watching it with Brian, and we were at my house, and it was just like, man, like, it was Raw. It wasn't even a pay-per-view, and he was just, you're just in awe. Like, you don't care what he does. He's going to win. He's going to be the good guy.
I'm going to keep mixing it up, too, man. I'm going to throw Jake the Snake Roberts in there. The outside the ring psychology, the inside the ring psychology. Again, man, hard hitting. Shit, Damien. He had Damien, man, you know, and to end every match, you know, you're going to get a DDT. You know, and he had wonderful feuds, man. He messed with the Warrior. Didn't he get the Warrior bit once?
No. I think he got Macho. We know we got
it was Macho, man. Yeah.
Macho got bit.
But I know that he messed with the Warrior a little bit, was messing with his head. Rick Rude kind of asked for that one. He was messing with Jake's wife, man. You know, and he even made a little run recently, and you know, in AEW, and he showed that he still has that psychology. You know, so just his brain alone, you know, is worth, you know, £1 million in gold. And then who are we gonna put in that four spot, man? Let me see. Man, I guess you're gonna be repetitive. You got to go with Hogan, man. You know, just Hogan carried the business for a while. You know, he was one of the first guys to start making, you know, like, movies. No Holds Barred.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a horrible movie, but shoot, I was there, you know, to watch it.
Yep.
So, you know, and Zeus was a horrible wrestler, man, but heck, man, they made for a heck of a feud. So that's my Mount Rushmore, man. So next question. So let's say the Monday Night Wars, you know, were going on, you know, back in the early 2000s, late 90s. When was it? Was it early 2000s?
Or 96 late 90s? Through 2001.
Late 90s.
All right. Well, with that going on, if I was to walk into your house, the heck were you watching, Eric?
Watching WCW.
Dang.
Because Hulk Hogan was there. I mean, dude, we're watching NWO. Even if it got repetitive, we're still watching it.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, I was, and it wasn't even my house. We didn't have cable all the time. So we're going to your house. We're going to our Uncle Jesse's house, who's another person who got us into wrestling.
Yep.
You're finding a way to watch it, or you're going to your friend's house, but it was Nitro. You go on to WWF, but for me, we're watching Nitro here and there because they had the most surprises.
Yep.
They had the leg up, like he was talking about that first hour with the cruiserweights. That was cool. Who didn't like Rey Mysterio, honestly? I'm watching WCW Nitro in the beginning.
That's like prime Rey and prime Eddie right there.
It was.
What about you, Tony? I go to your house, you know. What is it that you're watching?
It depends what time you showed up at my house.
Hey, man!
If you showed up at 7, I'd probably be watching WCW and watching all the cruiserweights. But as soon as 8 o'clock hit, boom, on the dot, I am switching it to Raw, and I kept it on Raw. And a lot of it just had to do with Steve Austin. Because as a kid, I was like, there's somebody from Texas who's like this awesome, this cool, this amazing. Like, he's just, I want to be this guy, you know. And he represented every blue collar work. He wanted to drink beer on the job. He wanted to cuss his boss out, punch him, drive a monster truck, drive a Zamboni, drive your pickup truck, bring a Budweiser beer truck all the way into the arena and just have a corporate beer bath with everybody.
Yes.
You know, all this stuff, like, this was that what drew me in. And then, of course, you had DX, you had Undertaker, you had I'm almost forgetting their names now.
Godfather.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, you had the Godfather. Okay. And even at the time, Owen, when he was still around, he was doing his things. Yeah. And you had Jarrett and the Job Squad, and you were seeing all these guys, and you were like, man, these were all characters that are getting meshed in. Shamrock, you know, that's how I got introduced to the UFC and MMA. through Shamrock when I saw Shamrock and my dad take me Blockbuster and he's like, oh, hey, look, here's the section of all the UFC. And
special interest.
Exactly. And I'm like, all right, cool. And we'd rent, you know, UFC 3 or 2, whatever they had available, and I'd watch it and I'd sit there and I'd be like, oh, man, that's so cool. And then you had Dan Severn come in and Steve Blackman, and it's just so many names you can name off from the Attitude Era now. And then you think back, it's like, man, if you compare it to then and now, it's like it's just apples and oranges because of how so much they get away with now versus what they're restricted to confine because of sponsorships.
Yeah, for me, man, if you were to walk in, you probably would have caught it on WCW because they were doing some pretty groundbreaking things. Like, yeah, watching wrestlers cross over really captured my attention. That's the first cool time I ever saw that. I wasn't sure if they were really there to beat up the WCW guys or not. I thought that was, this big dummy right here thought it was real, you know. And then you know, I thought that they had a lot of fresh talent too that I wasn't used to seeing. You know, I was always a WWE fan, so I was kind of getting used to their talent. And then, you know, you got an opportunity to watch Billy Kidman. You got an opportunity to watch Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, and young Chris Jericho, you know. So you got a lot of stars that you were able to see for the first time that never really had the public eye. Booker T. You know, Booker T at that time was my favorite wrestler, you know, because he had something, there was something different about that dude back then.
It's cool.
You know, so you definitely catch me watching WCW. But the funny thing is this. After I watched it so much, I got a little, I want to say, bored with it. And then I started going over and watching The Rock and Stone Cold and the Attitude Era, man. And, like, they really took over after that for me because the storylines were much more hard-hitting. Yeah. They got away with a little bit more. You know, you could, well, was it Deborah McMichael? Or who was it? Was it Sable?
Sable,
that,
the she was,
yeah, man. So it captured every young man's attention, you know, around that time. next question, man. Who is the best heel in wrestling all time? And to be fair, I'll give you two, man. A little less pressure.
Because you're not supposed to like the heels, but I mean, I always liked The Rock when he was a bad guy. He was always the coolest. Like, growing up, I was a Rock guy over a Stone Cold guy.
Me too.
He just seemed cooler. His insults were better. Man, I think Ric Flair. Just because he was... He was Million Dollar Man, but he was cooler than Million Dollar Man. I mean, he had Elizabeth in front of Macho Man. You know, he's like, I had her first. And he was cool. Just, he threw his money in your face, and then he still went out there and was the best wrestler. And his promos were A1. I think you got to go Ric Flair. Well, I'm going Ric Flair. There's all these other options, but I'm going Ric Flair.
Not bad, man. Let's go, Tony.
Man. You know, there's so many heels that over the years you've come to, like, hate, and you've also come to, like, appreciate. And that's a lot of, like Eric said, a lot of times a heel's job is supposed to be that you're supposed to hate them. But as I grew into being more of a fan to more appreciating the entire industry itself, I gotta put Randy Orton up there as number one.
Yeah.
The little things, and he will always say this, it's the little things that get over. And I never understood it till I kept watching him over and over, and I realized, okay, I get it. And even now, when he's cutting either a promo or he's just trying to work a match, the little things that he does to keep you engaged and understand, like, oh, he did that. I get it. I get what he's doing. And then towards the end of the match, you realize, now I understand why he did that. Now I understand why he talked the way he did. I understand why he's moving the way he's moving. Not just because, well, I'm just lazy, I'm just phoning in. No, there's a whole story being told, a psychology about it. And then lastly, and people are probably going to be like, oh, that's so easy, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Brock is just straight business. There's nothing fancy about him, and that's he gets it, and he understands what he needs to do. He's in there to get paid. He's in there to finish the job. He's in there, and he's gone. He's not worried about the fanfare. He's not worried about the recognition. Like, if you looked at it, if you listen to him on the Stone Cold podcast, he's like, I can't tell you how many titles I won, but I can tell you how much I have in my bank account.
Damn.
I was like, okay. At that moment, when I watched that podcast, I was like, okay, I get it.
That's some real heel stuff right there.
I'm like, he's like, nowadays, I just like to work on my truck, be on my farm, do my thing. But when I got to work, I'll work, get it done, I'm on my way. And that's what I like. I like, all right, that's cool. That's like my life I need to live by. I just want to get things done, move on, and just go back to my little, my paradise.
Man, I'm going to go with some outside the box ones just to have fun here. I'm going to start off with Ravishing Rick Rude.
Oh, the
man,
best.
That guy used to come in with the six pack, got his little sailor tattoo. You know, got Bobby the Brain Heenan tailing him.
Though. God, that mustache was legit.
Man, the robe, start working the hips. And then he'd go in and call your city out.
Yes.
You Kansas City sweat hogs. And, you know, he'd just pull a woman out of the crowd and, you know, give her a kiss. You know, bring her into the ring and, you know, and make all the gentlemen in the arena jealous, man. You know, so, like, Ravishing Rick Rude, like, he took that heel stuff, you know, to a whole different level. Like, you don't see wrestlers bringing people into the crowd unless they're plants now, right? Yeah, I don't think the women that he brought into the crowd were plants. I think that they were just beautiful women on the side, and he just wanted to make all the Kansas City sweat hogs,
yeah,
you know, jealous.
Yeah. I think Sable kind of took a little bit from Rick Rude, and when she would always say on the microphone, be like, I'm here for all the guys to see me and for all the girls to be me.
Yeah.
And I think Root started the first things like, guys wish they could be me and your girls here to see me. I'd be like, oh, that's good. That's, you got them.
Well, I watched a lot of wrestling shoot interviews too, man. And apparently, like, Rick Root too would go into bars, man. And like, I think like Mr. Perfect would, you know, say, hey, man, I met this dude right here. You know, he'll, $500, he'll beat you in an arm wrestling contest. Because Rick was a nice-sized guy, but he wasn't, you know, the biggest guy.
No.
And he was a professional arm wrestler, right?
Yeah.
You know, so Kurt would set him up, and then Rick Rude would knock him down and win the arm wrestling contest. And that's some real heel stuff right there, too, man.
Awesome. Working.
working and then, let me see. Say this next heel, and I'm actually going to, like, look into the future. I like what MJF is doing right now.
The best.
You know, just to change it up a little bit, I like how MJF is always on, like,
Facebook, even on Facebook.
Yeah, like, even if you were to see him at the Texas Children's Hospital, he'd probably still pinch your kids, you know, like medicine line, you know. And
the best one to this date, he would be one of the top 10 heels, I would say. But the best one to date was like the very first StarCast. And this kid in the wheelchair, like, rolls up and he's like wanting to get his autograph and picture, and he's like, how you doing? Oh, I'm good, sir. Thank you. How are you doing? Better than you. And stands up. I was like,
salt of the earth.
I was like, damn, this dude just stood up on the kid's wheelchair bound. Like, this is great. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, but it's all psychology, right?
Like, yeah, it's all
psychology. True heel is all psychology. You know, there's a bunch of the people we left off, like Undertaker. You know, when he was running as a heel, like, you couldn't beat the guy.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, that's heel stuff right there, man. You know, it's like, he's going to keep getting up and keep getting up and keep getting up, and then he's going to beat you.
Yeah.
You know, or he's going to kidnap Stephanie McMahon in the Ministry of Darkness. Good one. All right. So, with that being said, who was the best face of all time?
Crickets.
I would say. Well, I mean, it's kind of easy. You can go Hulk Hogan again. They wanted him to be a bad guy, and you couldn't even boo him. He was generational, and Hulk Hogan, man, you couldn't turn him down. He was the best. He's the first person I remember, you know, and I mean, he was catered directly to kids, and grown men loved him, and not in a weird way. But he was that dude, man. So I would say Hulk Hogan's like the top face. You can go Stone Cold too as well. But, I mean, they tried to make Hulk Hogan a bad guy, and it didn't work the way you wanted it to work.
Well, I mean, his colors are the McDonald's colors. He can be a bad guy. You ever thought about that?
Colors, too.
Yeah.
How can you hate a McDonald's?
So, you going, Hogan, what about you, Tony?
Oh, man. There's so much that goes into being a face, right? A baby face. Like, the run that Rob Van Dam had in early ECW days with Jerry Lynn, like, that was on, like, when he was like on the Friday Night Show, and it was like, okay, cool, like, I want to tune in and watch Rob Van Dam work, and he had a television title at the time, so like every match was like just nonstop crazy going, very high intense match, and you would enjoy it. You would enjoy like just watching him work. But I guess I could put RVD up there as one of the top baby faces. The other one would just have to be Steve Austin. I hate being repetitive. It's just the... You could not say a bad thing about Austin because you wanted to do that. Like, the whole point of a baby face is cheering. It's like, I can see myself in him, and you would see Austin. The beard, the colorful language, the finger flipping, the way he would just do things, you know, in between segments, the truck, you know, he would bring in the monster truck, run over a car, or he would bring in what was the forklift that he picked up Triple H in that match, and then dumped it over, right? So it's like you always wonder, what is he going to pull out next? Of course, the, like I said, the beer truck, and then spray down everybody with the beer hose. It's just like your memories come from just watching Steve Austin during the Attitude Era.
I'm going to have to go with Cena, man. And the reason I'm going to go with Cena is because that dude never turned into a bad guy. Oh. I almost felt like they were teasing us a little bit towards the end of his career. Like, we're going to finally get the NWO Cena. We're going to get the black and white Cena, man. We never got that, you know. And he was a face the whole flipping time, you know. So he was such a face that he even started drawing heat for being a face, which is kind of crazy.
I was part of that group. When he started going big, I got tired because it's just like he was super Cena. He was just get beat up, beat up, beat up. All right, let's switch it. Boom, and hit his five moves. Boom, done. I'm like, oh, man. And after a while, like, he would lose the title. I was like, oh, yes. Like, you were just hoping to get he would get injured, and he did. And he was like, oh, God, he's off my TV for a while, and that's great. And we could see new people start, you know, being featured more. And then he would come back at the Royal Rumble. And you're like, oh, crap. And then you're like, oh, wait, I'm supposed to hate the guy. And then you just start hating the guy. But then after a while, you appreciate it. I'm like, okay. Once you see his work ethic, I'm like, all right, I get it now. I get it. I understand why he did the things he did. And you appreciate it more because that guy never said no.
Well, here's something, too. He leads, like, the Make-A-Wish Foundation, I believe, and the number of times he's visited sick kids.
He has the record right now.
Yeah. You know, so that's a real face, man. That ain't someone playing a face. Yeah. That's a good dude. I know he's a neat freak to a weird degree on that show, man. But, right. Hey, man, you know, dude's got a big heart, man. So I'm totally cool with that. He's my favorite face, man. Not my favorite. He's the one I think is the biggest face. Next question. Best Royal Rumble moment.
Oh, man.
And if you need to, a little time to stir on this, man, I could start it off for y'all.
Go ahead.
Or Tony, you want to start it off?
Nah, you can go ahead, because I need
to. All right, man. Well, it's a couple for me, man. I'm going to say it's, you know, AJ Styles making his big entrance. I think it was one that people maybe suspected a little bit, but they weren't holding their breath for it. And then when that music hit, you know, and the pop in the crowd, and I mean, it was special. I think that will always be, you know, number one as far as, like, crowd reaction and the caliber of star that they had, you know, showing up. And then my other, this is, like, a little fun one. It's Curtis Axel is still in the damn Royal Rumble right now.
As we speak, he's still in it.
15 years, I think, now. He's been in the Rumble. It's a new record.
But he's been let go now, so now
he's still in
the Rumble.
He's still officially still
he's never
in the
been
Rumble.
Thrown over the top.
He might not be employed, but that Rumble's still going.
Yep.
Man. For me, I don't know, man. There's a few for me. I think people overlook seeing Kurt Hennig come in at the 02, I believe, Royal Rumble. That was awesome. And, shoot, there's a few of them, man. I don't know, seeing Diesel come out, that was pretty cool, too. It's tough. The Royal Rumble is hard to call because AJ Styles coming out was... That was special, man. He didn't expect that. McMahon didn't give any Japan people any credit. He didn't think AJ Styles was going to make it through, so... I would say AJ Styles coming in was awesome, too, man. So, Kurt Hennig and AJ Styles coming in, both of those are top for me.
I was trying to do the math right now, and I'm just horrible doing math. So,
it's tough.
Okay, 2001 was WrestleMania 17, right? Best WrestleMania ever, period, bar none. Mm-hmm. Then 2002 was 18. So 2003, the Royal Rumble there, because that was the debut of Batista, Brock Lesnar, world's best tag team.
What?
Matt Hardy broke out as single star.
What version of Matt Hardy was it?
V1. Yeah. V1.
Stronger than death, or?
No. This is V1 with the Mattitude facts and the Mattitude.
There we go.
His MFers. his Mattitude followers. Because this Royal Rumble alone just had so much talent that broke in on their first Royal Rumble debut, and this was leading up to WrestleMania 19. So, like I said, you had Matt Hardy. I think Ray was in there too. I could be wrong. Ray might have had a match earlier. But that Royal Rumble itself was just so symbolic, and with the amount of new talent that came in new, and then you see their career, you know, what we're talking, 18 years later now, where they all have gone. It's just insane, just the amount of talent in that one Royal Rumble alone.
All right, man. I'm going to throw a little fun fact in there too, or honorable mention to when Bret Hart lost early in the night and then yeah. comes out limping and then wins the Rumble.
Yeah.
And didn't he get him a title shot too that night or no? On that night, did he just win the Rumble?
I think he just won the Rumble.
I think he won it.
Was that the one where like he gets Lex Luger and they both hit the floor at the same time? Yeah,
because that one went to WrestleMania 10.
But man, hey, you never, at that point in the wrestling game, you never would have thought that someone could have pulled that off. So, you know, kudos to whoever, whoever came up with that storyline. I thought it was brilliant.
And hitting the ground at the same time is hard enough.
Yeah, man, that was pretty cool.
So, see, that one was actually planned. Like, they had actually rehearsed it. Luger and Hart really rehearsed it to where they can go over at the same time and fall.
It's tough, though, man.
Yeah. Now, the 2005 with Cena and Batista was a complete, absolute accident. That wasn't planned. What happened was Batista picked up Cena so hard, and with Cena's weight, Batista started falling backwards. So they both flipped over and landed at the same time. Like, there's clear-cut evidence. You can, like, step-by-step go through, and they both fell at the same time. And that wasn't the finish. Problem was, they were like, okay, we can fix this. We'll just get the GMs out. The GMs out of town were Eric Bischoff and Teddy Long. And they had left for the day. They were already going to the next town. They already did what they had to do. Let's catch the next town. So Vince had to go out there, and he was pissed. And you see him, he'll grab
tickets.
Yeah, he'll take his jacket down. That was all like him being mad at the fact that all of this had happened. They couldn't find the both guys. Now he has to go out there. And then as soon as he tries to get into the ring, both legs hit the side of the ring and tears both quads. And you see him try to get up and just buckle straight down. Now he's mad even more than he was originally was because he tore his quads. So... Oh, let me take back. No, he tore one quad. And he sat there mad, right? And he's calling the finish on the fly. Of course, everybody's like, oh, blah, 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 blah. He's like telling him, this is what we're going to do, blah, blah, blah. All right, great. As soon as he gets out and starts walking, he tears the second quad. And then finally he gets to the back. But, yeah, the first one, the one with Bret Hart and Luger, that was planned. That was like, okay, this is the finish. That would be a cool finish. But this one, the 2005 one, that one was completely... That was
organic
and not planned, and it wasn't supposed to go that way.
Nobody wanted to see Luger win.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to ride the Lex Express.
Here's a good one. Best feud.
Rock Austin. Easy.
Oh, man. Rock Austin?
Rock Austin leading up to WrestleMania 17.
Three WrestleManias, right?
15, yeah, they did 17, and... Well, not... Yeah, 17 19. And 19 was the... Was Steve Austin's final
longevity? Definitely, yeah. Entertainment, yeah.
Let me go on them. I'm gonna go. Let's see. Something older. We'll go Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes.
That's a hell of a damn.
Those are damn good. I mean, they took Dusty Rhodes' eye out.
Hard times.
Yeah. So I mean, Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes, man. Just that goes back to him being a heel, like prime heel. Him doing what he has to do, and just, you know, getting the best match out of Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty Rhodes is a good worker, but that's Ric Flair, and you know, they both can carry a promo, and man, that's timeless. You know?
And I'm gonna go with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Yeah. Because he had two people that genuinely probably did not like each other.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way that it appeared on the surface, and from what I've read and from what I've seen, they, you know, didn't like each other. Both of them believed they were next. Mm-hmm. You know, in order to get that title. And that Iron Man match too, man, where you got Shawn Michaels doing the reverse dips upside down with, who is it, Jose Lothario,
awesome.
As his trainer. I mean, like, oh man, it's that feud, it felt real to me, man. It felt real.
And it probably still is if you hear Bret Hart being, you know, I don't call it bitter, but still taking shots
still
to this
bitter.
Day.
He's still better.
So, I mean, it's still going to this day.
They both got a run, though. I don't see what there is to be mad about. You know what I mean?
You want
to
be the best. You don't want to be 1B.
Back then, it was just one guy.
It was Brad.
Can't share the spotlight.
Then they gave it. Then it was Shawn afterwards.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Best tag team.
Man, that's tough. And I mean, you always hear Road Warriors just because of the pop and stuff, but I don't know, man. There's...
Man, that I would say right now, well, I wouldn't, right now what probably wouldn't be the good term to label them, but like, I think I've been more drawn to Motor City Machine Guns, Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin. Those two, what they were able to do in TNA in the early years was just awesome. And I like how everything just came together, even after Shelley did his Paparazzi Productions group and Sabin did his whole Hell Sabin thing for a bit. And then they were like, all right, we're both from Michigan. We both can do, you know, we know how to work, so we'll just form a tag team. And they did, and they started running. And they ran roughshod through TNA for a bit, went to Japan, won the junior heavyweight titles. And then they came back. And even just recently, 2 months ago, they came back and on Slammiversary. And then the following show they did on Tuesday, they won the title. So they're currently tag team champions right now. And it's just amazing to see them work. And it's like, they haven't lost a single step. Like, Sabin probably hasn't wrestled in a year and a half.
Still got it.
And the dude just jumped in and like, we're going to do a surprise, give something for the guys. And then he's like going, still going. Like, he's just been wrestling every week.
Yeah, what about you, Eric?
I think, you know what I mean? I'm going to go a little different. Steiner Brothers.
Oh, you son of a gun! Man!
Dude, the Steiner Brothers don't get the... they don't get their due, man. They were... Dude, if I can say it a little bit, they were kicking ass. They were kicking ass, and they didn't have to say anything cool or anything like that. They just, you felt it when they came out, man. Those varsity jacks they had, and they just, dude, they were beating people up, and
They could really beat you up because they were Division I wrestlers. Yeah. Like, you were gonna lose to those guys in a fight in the back too.
You're not gonna stop them. They're gonna do what they want to do. Who was it? Mick Foley said that. No, it wasn't them. Well, they took liberties with people. They broke people's jaws and stuff. So I mean, I have to say Steiner Brothers. Something different, man. I just think those guys are cool. And they were on Raw. They were on Nitro. I mean, they need to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes. Prime Steiner Brothers, you know, probably the best, man.
Dog-faced gremlin going to work.
I'm going to pull it back, man. I'm going to go a little different route because you've already selected one. I'm going to go with the Rock and Roll Express, man.
I was going to say Harlem Heat, but okay.
I was thinking about Harlem Heat too, man. But, you know, it's hard to...
Rock and roll.
So many people have taken and borrowed, you know, a piece of the Rock and Roll Express's game. You know, like the Rockers, you know, that's Rock and Roll Express 2.0, you know.
Right.
They took the name. You know, and you can even, like, look at the Young Bucks with all their tassels and the clothes that they wear and, you know, the high-flying spots and stuff, you know. So I kind of feel like the Rock and Roll Express people have borrowed a lot of stuff from them. You know, the girls loved them. The kids wanted to be them.
They'd always tell you they have the building hanging off from the Raptors, man. They will always let you know.
Yeah. Golly, man. And then them old dudes, man, they pulled off like an NWA championship about a year ago, too.
Recently, yeah. The Crockett Cup, yep.
Yeah, like, oh, man, you know. So just for the heck of it, man, like, hey, man, that's my best tag team. Honorable mention, Harlem Heat, though, too, man. Like, you got, you know, Booker T and Stevie Ray, and you got the Power Man, and then you got the... You know, the just technician everything. Or the athletic, you know, individual book, man. And those two were like peanut butter and jelly, man. It's like UGK, you know, you got Pimp C and Bum B. You know, they both made each other good because there was a juxtaposition between the two styles, man. So excellent call on that. What would you say, like, right now? You got AEW and WWE going, you know, head-to-head right now. Who do you think's winning that war, Eric?
I don't know, man. I think the numbers are showing AEW, isn't it? I mean, they're showing they're winning.
Yeah, on Wednesdays.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, everybody, they all love an underdog story, right? So, yeah. I mean, dude, you're pulling for them. Like, you want to see it happen. I think they're winning just because they came in with so much momentum. Granted, it's kind of, to me, taking a little bit of a dip because of some of the booking, but they have the talent there. They've come in, like I said, with that momentum. They have the fan following. I think they're winning right now just because WWE's been, you know, I guess lazy in what they could do and what they're just not doing what they need to do. So I'm going to AEW.
Let's go, Tony.
This
is a sore subject for Tony, guys.
It is very sore subject. You can hear in my voice how just distraught I am that NXT is the thing. Honestly, I don't care. It just bottom line, I don't care so much. Now, I'm not the type who was like, oh, AEW's new fresh, yay, we get to go against the culture. It's like, it's never going to happen. Like, you have to understand, WWE itself is a global wide publicly traded company. There's not a single thing, not even the U.S. government could take down Vince.
You know, with Vince is in the government. His wife works in Trump's
government. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's like, there's no way you can, like, make a statement saying, oh, well, AEW's going to beat him. It's like, that's, you're just bound to lose. Now, what you could do is create your own niche. Be like, be different. Be like, okay, I'm, because you'll see all WWE programs the same. All camera work, all presentation, everything's the same. And you'll see it across the board. Not one show is different from real. Regardless if there's a brand split, regardless if they're, well, this guy only shows up on this show, or this guy only shows up on that show, or they only do certain things with certain stuff, it's all presented the same. AEW needs to present itself different from the original formula. Now, the bad thing about AEW is that they're still trying to figure it out. That's something that should have already worked a long time ago, because I remember beginning of the new year, and they were at, still at Wrestle Kingdom. They were like, oh, AEW, All Elite. And it was like, okay, cool, that's their company. And then as the year rolled on, and then did October, and then they did the shows, and they were like, well, none of this makes sense, and one person's doing this, and how, why is Brandy doing this group? And is it, but she's like being rah-rah supportive for Cody when she's over here doing her heel stuff. It's like, it doesn't make all sense. And I'll tell you right now, I watch AEW. I put in more hours for AEW than I have with NXT. I've stopped watching NXT for a couple of years now, not because I hated it, because I already know what to expect out of them. Like, I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to take place. I know what's going to be, like, the direction that they're going to go with. I'll just watch TakeOver. Now, with AEW, I'm still trying to figure out what they're trying to do, who they're trying to bring in, what they're trying to present. So, a lot of the issues that they do with AEW is, like, they'll bring in a new guy. Oh, that's so-and-so. I'm like, okay, well, as a viewer, who's that guy? Like, what? Why do I need to care about
who's it? Matt Cardona?
Exactly. Like, who's Matt Cardona? Well, he's an action figure guy. I'm like, okay, that doesn't really sound intimidating to me. Like, if your life consists of collecting action figures and reselling them, it's like, you got to give me more. Why do I care about you in general, right? So you got to build these stories. You got to do these vignettes. You got to, you know, give them mic time. You got to tell them, you know, a lot of complaint is like WWE is too scripted. They give you a page or two pages, and this is what you need to say, word by word, blah, blah, blah. But they're telling you a story. Granted, most of the time you can tell it's obviously written by somebody else, because nobody would talk in that sort of fashion. When you go to AEW, they don't give you a script that you tell, hey, this is what you need to put your bullet points on. You got 10 minutes to go out there. All right, cool. And they do their stuff right, but a lot of times it's like, okay, I don't understand. Like, you got to give me more. You got to, this is where you got to use social media. You got to use Twitter. You got to use YouTube. Do get us to go there to be invested in the characters, the wrestlers, the personality backstage, the commentators. You got Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone and Excalibur. But then on Dark, you'll have Excalibur and Taz or Schiavone and somebody else that they bring in. Oh, yeah, he's just doing commentary. Or Jericho will do commentary. It's like, that's great and all, but I need consistency. I need to know, like, what you're trying to tell me when you're doing commentary. Because the best way I tell people to, like, commentary should be, like, if I'm blind and I can't tell, if I can't see and I'm a blind person, commentary should be able to describe what's going on in the ring. A lot of times, it's not. The wrestlers are providing the lyrics, but then the commentators don't even know what the hell the lyrics are. So
Jim Ross would be proud of you right now if he heard that.
But you know what, though? To be honest with you, WWE's announced team has been terrible. I mean, anytime there's a debut or something, it's just they don't sound enthusiastic. They all have the same. If you look at AJ Styles' debut or anybody else's debut, they go, oh, or they all have like the same words. It's just like, it's kind of like you could tell that there's, it's scripted, and it's just kind of like, there's no emotion. Like, JR was the best at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, AEW has, they know what they're catering towards. They're not, the fan base is us right here, this age group. And we're going to follow them. It doesn't matter where we follow them.
Wow.
That's why they went and got Tony Schiavone.
Well, I'm leaning towards AEW for a couple of reasons. Number one, like, you're getting introduced to a bunch of brand new talent. So there's people that I haven't seen before. I really like the aspect that on some of these dark matches that they're bringing in people that are stars regionally, you know, to face some of these national stars, and you're what you're doing is you're exposing these regional stars to a national audience. You know, it's essentially what they used to do back in the day in the territories. You know, they'd bring somebody in to fight this territory's champion or whatnot. You know, so you're getting exposure for new guys, and you're building a fan base for them, and you're actually probably getting like early dibs on them too. You know,
right?
You know, like you see Brian Pillman. You know, they kind of scooped him up. He's a star in the making. So. Yep. Let's go ahead and scoop him up.
Yeah, but he signed under MLW for now, so I know he's trying to get out of that contract. And that,
the contracts are flexible too in AEW, right? Which is another good thing.
And it's a good thing you brought up that they're bringing new talent, and that's what I like about AEW is that they're bringing in new talent, and especially when they had promised at the beginning they were bringing more women from Japan over here. And for me, somebody who keeps tabs on Ice Ribbon, Tokyo Joshi, Stardom, all those promotions, I like. Invested in, like I'll go on social media and see what happened, because I'm not staying up, you know, at 2 in the morning just to watch women's wrestling. Maybe for a Wrestle Kingdom, but everything else, no. But I'll go and check, see, okay, what happened right now. Like Stardom's having their 5-star Grand Prix tournament, so I'm checking to see every morning, okay, what happened, what's going on. You know, Ice Ribbon is doing their stuff. Io's sister, Mio Shirai, is back. You know, so she retired because of injury. So if she's trying to do a comeback, that's great. You know, that's another name you can, you know, invest in. And then you have Tokyo Joshi with Shoko Nakajima and Yuka Sakazaki. Those are my two favorite. So, and then you got DDT too, DDT Pro. So you have Maki, who's doing great things over there. You know, AEW can be what I thought was going to be. It's just this platform for all these independent wrestlers to come in, get eyes on, and then we can go to their social media. We can go all this and follow them through. And, oh, they're going to be on this event through their social media. Great. We'll just pay the $5 to watch the stream or whatever, you know.
Well, I also think that they wrestle hungry over there too.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I watch the WWE and I'm like, man, there's a couple of guys that are going at it. And it's not like they're not working hard, but when your bank account has 6 figures in it already, you're going to, you know, handle yourself a little bit differently when you're
still... They're in their effort stage of life, which is not there.
But if you're fighting to get noticed, you're fighting to get to the proper part of the card, you know, you're probably going to take some more chances, man. You know, so I really enjoy watching these people take their chances. Like, I like watching Sammy Guevara do some of this stuff. I know people get upset that there's too many spots, but I enjoy the spots. I've not gotten to the point where there's too many spots. So here's what I'm going to do. We're going to end it with this question right here. All-time best wrestling intro music.
Man.
You need a second?
No, I'm going Jericho.
Jericho's got the best. Which one?
Excuse me. Break the Walls Down. We're going to Break the Walls Down. It's the best entrance. Don't get me wrong. I like Fozzy. I hit it when I hit the bench press. Got Judas going. But, dude, Break the Walls Down is the best. It's the best entrance. There's even a video of him telling me, that's the best entrance in the world as he's walking into the Royal Rumble. It's the best.
Oof. Wow, as somebody who in their early teenage years used to collect themes and download them and try to find them, like, I have a hard drive with just a bunch of wrestling video, and it's like, I think I stopped at almost 2 terabytes of just video and music. There's so many themes, even now, like, some of the stuff that they've been putting out in NXT is just amazing.
Isn't it?
Like EOS is just like one of the headbangers. Because I'm an EDM guy. I listen to a lot of EDM, especially when I'm working with graphic design. So I'll put on EDM and I just blast it.
EOS
so
is fire.
EOS is pretty good. But I hate being cliche still, just because of Austin, man. Just
the glass break. The
glass break, and that's it. You already know. You're like, stand up, chest puffed out. You know, little head shake, and you start talking trash, and you know.
You feel it, man.
You feel it, yeah. And even like all of them, like the early Steve Austin, before I even knew who Steve Austin was, you know, you just hear the glass break, and it's just burn, 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 and it's just that heavy grunge guitar riff. And even now, when he did with the one with Disturb.
You can't find it.
You can't even find it now. Yeah, so I have that in my hard drive, and it's just one of those, like, I'll keep it in there. I'll, like, try to get it on my phone from time to time.
But you can't find it.
Yeah. Another one that was good, and I'll say this as a runner-up, Chris Benoit's Our Lady Peace. I forget the name of the track.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever, yes. because they that band took it off their library. They don't. They won't play
it.
It's
on Amazon. It's on Amazon.
Is it on Amazon? Good. I'm glad because I've been wanting to listen, and you can't anymore. Like on Spotify, they'll have like a concert recording of it, but they won't.
It ain't the same.
It ain't the same.
Amazon Music.
That track was hard. I love.
I'm gonna go with. I liked your Io Shirai one, but I can't go with that now. I thought when the Brood originally came out, man, yeah. They came up out of the stage.
That was easily a top five. Yeah, it's definitely not five.
But that song, man, it really hits, man. Like you could bring that back out today, and the kids would love it.
They come out rocking to it and stuff, man.
Exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And who would have known Gangrel, the leader of that group, would have been the one not to really make it, man?
Exactly. It was all dark, and then you just see the light, the fire start up, and just do the circle, and then they're coming up, and they're just bobbing their heads. Wah, do, 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 wah.
You're right, though, man. They basically outshined him.
Yeah.
From the jump.
Who else am I going to go? I really like that Harlem Heat, that Booker T intro, like whenever you heard that build up.
Yeah.
Doom, 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 doom. Man, I
think his entrance is awesome. The pyro.
You know, so.
Yeah,
man. So,
that
man.
Pyro was hot. I remember one time I went to, what was it? Bad Blood 2003. I went to that show. My dad took me. Nice. And he came out, and I remember when his pyro went off, I was like, oh my God, my face is going to melt because I was so close to the stage. I was like, wow, 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 wow.
God bless the Compact Center, damn it.
I missed the Compact Center, man. It was so awesome.
All right, man. Well, we're at the end of the episode, man. Eric. Where can people find you on social media?
I'm on Instagram. Another wrestler name. It's Kurt_Henny_22. So a little Henny and a little Kurt Hennin. So Kurt Henny 22.
As far as for me on Instagram, you can find me Liquid Impact. Not so much wrestling on there. It's a lot of my artwork / whatever I feel that day. But on Twitter, you can find me at Dexy Maruya. That's DexMiRuya. That's where all my wrestling is. That's where everybody connects me through. That's where I keep my contacts in the wrestling industry. So not just people, but companies and whatnot. And every now and then I get some graphic design work from them. So you might see some of my stuff pop up on TV every now and then. Probably not. Usually I'm just too busy. Usually I'm so busy with school, I try not to get too much work done. But every now and then I get a few people at me because they just like what we discussed, like today's podcast.
All right, guys. Is the coach Chris Ortiz at the Be Someone podcast had us just a little escape from the norm. And y'all do me a favor. Y'all go out and be that someone. Take care and have a blessed day, everybody.
This is Blue July, and you're listening to the Be Someone podcast. Lights looking bright, the H got the vibe. She's my name on the sign, it's my time to shine. When I was cruising 45 and it crossed my mind that I shine like a sun and that I'll be someone.
Lights, camera, session, use the flow molasses. Blue the line, my fashion, future brightening glasses. Applause from the masses.
This is the Be Someone podcast.